Happy Friday, everyone. Summer is officially here. It is hot outside, so stay cool, stay hydrated, have some fun as we talk hockey for the next hour with Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, and I'm David Amber here on Hockey Central. We will be welcoming in Mark Spector, senior columnist for Sportsnet.ca, in just a matter of moments, as well, back by popular demand, a summer edition of Take Your Pick, where there'll be a little friendly debate between Anthony, Justin, and I, and they'll take their pick on some big topics surrounding the National Hockey League. Gentlemen, great to have you here, and we could be rolling towards some really good news as far as some labor peace in the National Hockey League. All signs indicate that even though it's the weekend, that the NHLPA and the NHL are hard at work cementing the final steps towards a collective bargaining agreement, guys, and there's lots of chatter about some of the aspects of this new collective bargaining agreement. It isn't set in stone, but a lot of talk that the cap will stay at $81.5 million for the foreseeable future. There'll be a cap on escrow, which the players like. There'll be deferred salary, which the owners like. And quite frankly, it helps the players as well, because that will help lower the escrow totals. And once you get through all the minutiae of the dollars and cents, what could be very interesting for hockey fans is that from what I've been told, the Olympics in both 2022 in Beijing and in 2026 in Milan Cortina, Italy, are going to be included in this CBA. So for those of us that were longing for the NHL players to get back at it and Canada to have their best players on board, it looks like that could be one of the elements as well. So I wanted your guys' thoughts, Justin and Anthony, on some of the aspects of this CBA and the fact that it does look like both sides see the benefits of getting this locked away as a contingency before there is a resumption of play this year.
Stewie, how did it feel to hear the words escrow that many times?
Escrow, what's going on, David? We're going to have a little talking to, but I think it's great. And this is coming from myself, who's been through two lockouts, me coming out of junior into the National Hockey League. There was one year that all those 2003 great players were supposed to play, and one in 2012 as well. So it's good now that both sides can see, hey, for the long-term future and stability of the National Hockey League, we got to get a deal done and not have, have both sides arguing about little things. But I think it's amazing now that we finally get to see a McDavid and Crosby Olympics. So you might as well just give them the gold medal now. For all my American listeners and Russian listeners, Canada's going to win it, guaranteed. But it's great to see that, in a pandemic, something positive can come out of this. And it's great to see that they're going to, figure out the CBA.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. You know, as a fan of the game, and obviously being what we do, I love it. This is a lot of great news. You know, they're working on hockey coming back. They're talking about going to the Olympics. We're talking about more hockey, good hockey, all good things from a fan perspective. I did have a question for Stewie. Did you ever vote on any of these sort of things? Like the NHLPA is holding a vote. It blows my mind that they only need a simple majority to pass some of this stuff. Like in the NFL, half the guys didn't like the CBA, but it barely passed, so they go ahead with it. You would think you would need a bigger majority. But Stewie, I was just wondering what the sort of the process is like and how informed you are when you make those votes.
Yeah, I took it upon myself to sort of, during the last lockout, to actually go to New York City and see exactly what everyone's talking about. But a lot of guys are really not privy to actually the business going on. It's not trying to reveal too much what goes on behind the scenes. But like you said, it's majority vote. And if it's, 51-49, you're going to go with the 51. So it's going to be interesting to see, how this vote sways.
I like the fact you're already handing Canada the gold medal 2 years from now. Listen,
so are you, David.
Who are you, David?
What are you kidding?
Well, I don't know.
You already got your jersey out. What are you talking about?
No. You know what? The Americans, the American forward group is sensational. When you think about Eichel and Matthews and, Kyle Connor, just a quiet, good guy, JT Miller, et cetera. Pat Chiaretti,
McDavid,
still hanging in there. Blake Wheeler. Yeah, no, listen.
This guy on about Kyle Connor.
Well, those Germans, eh? Those Germans are going to be pretty good. They got Draisaitl and
Stützle.
I don't know. Bottom line is I think it would be very exciting. The idea of the Olympics being part of this CBA deal, I know that was something that was really remiss from the last Olympic Games for the NHL players. When you talk to the guys, they really wanted to go there and represent their country. It's something that, it's funny, young kids, you know, maybe 20 years ago, it was just, I want to be an NHL player. Young kids now do say, I want to be an NHL player, but I also want to go to the Olympics and represent my country because they've seen it happen. They watched 2010 Sidney Crosby's golden goal. So bottom line is this is all good news for the NHL because, you know, all the financial dealings seem to be getting taken care of. The cap staying at $81.5 million, something we've talked about at length on this show, specifically Brian Burke. You know, where's the cap going to be? The fact that they can hold the cap up at the same number it's been at the last couple of years, despite the reduced revenue, is a good thing for the players, certainly. And the deferred payment helps the owner. So it looks like all the, you know, I's will be dotted, the T's will be crossed. We'll get this done, and then we can move towards phase three, which is really what's important this year, is getting to that phase three on July 10th or July 13th and the resumption of play. And we're going to bring in Mark Spector in just a matter of moments, senior columnist with Sportsnet.ca, to discuss what looks like, guys, the inevitable Edmonton / Toronto hub cities. Hasn't been officially announced, but for all intents and purposes, it looks like those two will be the hubs. Your initial thoughts, and I know we've talked about it a bit on the show, but you like the idea, fellas, that it would be two Canadian hubs in these two, you know, hockey mad cities?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I wrote an article on Sportsnet.ca yesterday, kind of going over that there is lots to like. You know, Edmonton seems like the safest place. Toronto is headed the right direction, but also provides things, that other cities can't in terms of delivering the games, broadcasting the games. Toronto obviously a lot higher risk. Edmonton the safer of the two choices, but I think when you really knocked out all the cities and what they had to offer, this makes the most sense.
Well, it makes the most sense, and it makes the most dollars. You know, with the Canadian, the U.S. exchange rate now, I think it's going to be good, and that's going to be save a lot of money because, David, as you mentioned, escrow's coming up, and I think the league and the players need to save as much money as possible, and Toronto and Edmonton provide that option. So I know the money's secondary, but not to me, and it's not to the players. So it's good that it's in Canada, just due to the market value of the dollar right now.
And for those wondering why the cap can stay at $81.5 million for the foreseeable future until the revenues do exceed the $4.6 billion they currently are, and then the cap could move accordingly, there is a U.S. broadcast deal about to be figured out over the next course of the next year. And the hope and the expectation from the NHL is hopefully they can find a way to really gain some significant profit there. And it wouldn't just be, again, the TV contract, but the digital side of things has become a huge thing to monetize for all of pro sports. So there is a hope there that they can get some big dollars coming from the U.S., and that'll really help, again, buoy what's already a very strong, you know, financial league, taking a
massive
hit, though, of course, guys.
Does that mean that Berkey was wrong when he said there's going to be up to a 50% rollback? I think he was wrong when he said that. Did he not say that not too long ago, Justin?
Yeah, I think he said 30, Stu. It was a 20% escrow cap plus 10% deferral. I think he called it 30.
You know, if Berkey's listening right now, he's throwing his radio across the room. I'm going to get that,
Stewie. Check in the group chat.
Yeah, exactly. Berkey will get his say. But yeah, they've got creative and they found ways to keep the economy afloat and to keep the salary cap at $81.5 million. Again, all this is subject to change. Nothing set in stone, but it looks like the framework is in place for a pretty good CBA for both the players and the ownership groups. Let's bring in Mark Spector, senior columnist, Sportsnet.ca, a friend of the show and all-around good guy. Mark, how you doing on with Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, and David Amber?
Very well. Gentlemen, how's things going out in the other hub city here in Canada?
We're doing well. It's hot. It's steamy. It feels like the summer, but we're still talking hockey and with the anticipation that 10 days from now, phase three could begin. But listen, we're more interested in phase four, and that's when the puck would be dropped on the qualifying round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and seemingly the puck would be dropped in both Toronto and Edmonton, as you alluded to. So what can you tell us about the logistics of an Edmonton hub? What would that look like to the National Hockey League, Mark?
Well, it's a, how would I say, it's an excellent setup the only thing that ever worked against Edmonton was beat Edmonton. That's what I'm trying to say. Their physical setup of having a brand new, you know, 3-4 year old rink, state of the art rink, tons of dressing rooms, more than any of the old, you know, most of the older rinks. Right? They have a home Western Hockey League and visiting Western Hockey League dressing room, plus of course the NHL and home visitors. They got a state-of-the-art gym at the rink. They got one at the JW Marriott, which is across the street. Players can walk on their, you know, be separated from the public. So it's all inside a bubble. Physically, the bubble here is really, really good and tight and awesome. The only problem Edmonton ever had was asking people to spend 2.5 months in Edmonton. A lot of people go, oh, man, when I come in there in January, it sucks. So, you know, once they got past that, and maybe certainly the Players Association, I saw sort of a changing in the tide of who wants to go to Edmonton where you can go to Vegas to, well, hang on a second, coronavirus is going wild in Vegas. It's going to be 40 degrees there, so we can't golf or sit around any pools. No one's going to a casino. There are no shows. Maybe Edmonton's not so bad after all.
And that's let me follow up before Justin and Stu jump in. What's the mood of the city? Because that's something, you know, some people said to me, well, why do Edmonton, why do Toronto, why do Vegas, why do they want the NHL to come? Why add this risk? So I'd like to know, what is the mood of the city? Are people generally happy about this pending announcement? Or are they like, oh, brother, we've got Corona under control. Why would we even risk, you know, bringing in people from all across the globe and there could be an outbreak?
Yeah, there's surely a sampling of all of those, you know, all of the above, right? There's people that are concerned about it, that think it's a dumb idea. And, you know, the people who are more economy focused are saying, wow, at least, you know, let's get some people in town. Let's fill a couple hotels. Let's, you know, get some people working. You know, I want to say this, like in the Edmonton zone, there's been 15 coronavirus deaths. There's been just over 1,000 cases here. So, you know, they've obviously, the city's done a good job of it. And you know, Alberta's done a pretty well with coronavirus. I'm not going to say we're not focused on it because people are staying in and being careful, but we haven't had, how would I say, we're not a hot spot. And I think people feel that we've controlled it through the worst times. And if this thing is coming in here and it's in a bubble, it's not like the NHL guys are coming out and spreading out all over town to go to all the different restaurants and bars and right. And run, you know, meet Edmontonians and do signing sessions at West Edmonton Mall. Like, that's not happening. So, sure, there are people that are concerned, and I get that. But I think, you know, the medical community would tell you that if they're staying in their bubble, they, you know, I guess the chance exists that they'll infect one another. But the chances of greater Edmonton, you know, all of a sudden turning into a hotspot because of this are, you know, I would suspect very low.
We're with Mark Spector, senior columnist with Sportsnet.ca. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, Mark. So obviously this is going to be a different looking playoffs from a fan perspective. You can no longer go to the rink, watch the games. I'm sure it's frowned upon to hang around and look for autographs. So how the media covers this is going to be crucial for the fan and their experience of the 2020 Stanley Cup. What is going to be different from the media perspective? What's it going to look like for a fan this year as opposed to your normal Stanley Cup final run?
Well, everything's different, Justin, because, you know, like for me as a longtime sports writer, you know, it's about access, right? Like, let's say you're working for one paper and I'm working for the other. You're working for The Athletic. I'm working for Sportsnet. So you and me go to the rink every day and I'm trying to beat you with a better story. So how do I do that? I do that by having better relationships with players. I do that by asking smarter questions, by having a better line of questioning, which gives me better answers. Now, you and I go to a morning skate. Let's say I check off all those boxes I just spoke of. Now we both sit down to write. I got better stuff than you. So unless you're like Shakespeare himself, I'm going to have a better piece than you because I'm like a baker with better ingredients, right? So that's a normal setting. In this setting, we're all getting the same stuff because my relationships with players, I don't get to talk to players face-to-face, right? None of that. So we're not going to talk to a player face-to-face the whole playoffs. we'll be doing Zoom calls and things like that, which means you get all the answers to my questions and I get all the answers to your questions. So frankly, gentlemen, this whole pandemic reporting, it becomes very homogenous. We all cook our meal with the exact same ingredients, right? Every single writer and TV guy is looking at the same stuff. There are very few scoops, and there certainly is no advantage to asking smarter questions and getting better answers, because Justin, if you ask a smart question, I use your answer. So, you know, I would say to fans that this isn't ideal. From a journalistic perspective, it's nowhere close to ideal. But like everywhere else in this pandemic, we're all just working with what we've got. We're happy to be able to have playoffs to cover. We're happy to cover them. And we're going to all go do the best we can. But the lengthy one-on-one or the special insight with a guy's parents or things like that that happened during a Stanley Cup run, none of that stuff, I assume, will happen this year.
Stewie.
So what's the mood, with the players now that Edmonton has been announced as being one of the hub cities? Would they prefer to be in Edmonton, or would you think that, did you get the sense that they prefer to be on the road for these upcoming playoffs?
You mean the Oilers players? That's a good question.
Yes.
It's going to be like a road trip for them. They're staying in hotels. My understanding is the Oilers will get to use their dressing room when they're a home team, but I think they'll be in the dressing room rotation with everybody else. So there will be a lot of days when someone else is using the Oilers dressing room, and the Oilers are dressing in the dressing room 3 or 4 even in the rink. So, you know, there's really no home ice advantage for the Oilers. They don't get to go home. You know, they don't get to see their families any more than any other guy sees their families in this thing. So, I frankly, have I asked any Oilers players? No, because we haven't talked to them for a while. But I just, you know, the league has gone a long ways here to make sure there's no home ice advantage for the Toronto Maple Leafs or for the Edmonton Oilers. So, you know, frankly, as one player told me from another team, he said, you know, I don't care what hotel we stay in. After 7 days in the place, I'm sick of it. So I think that's going to be the case. Like, Edmonton's going to do a nice job. Toronto's going to do a nice job. And after 2 weeks of that bubble, everyone's going to be sick of being there. I don't care where you put them.
Mark, I wonder, have the expectations changed for the Oilers? And what I mean by that is, you know, they were fighting for a Pacific Division title. You know, we hit this pause. You know, it's been 4 months. Is the expectation still like, wow, the Oilers better win at least a round or two rounds? Or is it just sort of died down in that sense because it's been such a long pause? Because I imagine the standings kind of go out the window a little bit at this point. Like, I get you're playing the 12th seed in Chicago, but... you know, everyone's at the same disadvantage. It's really just which team can re-engage physically and mentally quicker than the next.
Yeah, Dave, you're right. There's two sides to that coin, right? On one, I think the pressure's off everyone because there's a built-in excuse for every team. Oh, man, this was weird. We lost our first round. We weren't ready. You know, maybe, I mean, the question's going to be, frankly, guys, is I talked to Coates the other day. On every single team, there's going to be somebody or two or three guys who aren't in as good a shape as they should be, right? I think we can count on that. Somebody's been delinquent here during the break. Now, the question becomes, is that guy one of your best players, or is he a fourth-line guy or third-pairing defenseman? So, you know, if we come back here and the guys that are supposed to carry the mail aren't ready to carry the mail, there's going to be a lot of, you know, they'll face a ton of heat. Assuming that the team's just comes out and plays well and they lose a series, I think you're right. There's a built-in excuse for everyone because it's so weird. But don't kid yourself, man. The Oilers are, you know, first of all, they're a good team. And they expect to, I mean, I think it's kind of changed in this town a little bit. Used to have an average team that people expected a lot of. Now they got a pretty good team. And a team that expects a lot from itself. Like, I think they finally passed the part here where they're worried about how bad this organization's been in the past. I don't think these guys care. They're good. They got the top two scorers in hockey. You know, they got some nice young defensemen. They got enough goaltending here. They expect to beat Chicago. I expect them to beat Chicago. And I'll tell you what, if they don't beat Chicago, the 12th place team, yeah, there'll be some heat for these guys. And that's rightfully so. I don't feel bad about that.
Mark, how does the news of the flat salary cap affect the Edmonton Oilers going forward, sort of over the next three seasons here? Is that really bad news for them, or just sort of semi-bad news like it is for most teams around the league?
Well, for them, the good thing for them is their best two guys are signed, right? They're two real key players, and Drysdale and McDavid are both there long-term here. So that's, you know, that kind of, you can breathe some fresh air when you think about that. The next guy coming up here after next season, after 2021, is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And, you know, I guess I'd say to you guys, like, if there was teams out there that had, I mean, I guess there will be teams with more cap space, but it's not like there's going to be a bunch of teams that want to pay Ryan Nugent-Hopkins $3 million more than Edmonton can pay him. It's tight everywhere, right? The market's bad to be a free agent here. So, you know, could Nugent-Hopkins go somewhere else and get more money? I'll bet you he could. But, you know, you're also looking at a lifetime order who slugged it out through some awful bad times here, and he's finally on a team that might be pretty good. So, you know, that to me is their most immediate concern, is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Darnell Nurse is up in a couple of years. Oscar Klefbom's up in a couple of years. Hopefully by then, well, you know, this pandemic will be behind us. We'll be back in a normal world. So I wouldn't put them in, you know, put them up as a team that is really going to be affected harshly by the lower salary cap. They'll be fine. They got their big guys signed. I think in most hockey markets, if you can keep your big guys that draw all the fans and win the games for you, that's the most important thing, isn't it?
Stewie.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. So game one versus Chicago, who's starting in net for the Edmonton Oilers?
That's an excellent question, man. They're pretty much the ultimate 50-50 team this year. You know, they are, and it's because one of their goaltenders, Mike Smith, is I think, what's he, 34? And the other guy, Mikko Koskinen, is real good when he plays about 40 games a year, but he's not real good if he has to play more than that. So the good news is, I think we're trending towards a 50-50 league, guys. Most teams do this. But the bad news is, when the playoffs start, who the hell knows who's going to be the goaltender? I think the coach leans on Mike Smith a little more. They like Mike Smith because he handles the puck and he changes your forecheck, right? Teams have to do a different forecheck when Mike Smith plays. But I'm going to tell you, he played just barely more than 50% of the games this year. So, you know, during the playoffs, if they were at the top of the Pacific most of the season, and they did it with 50-50 goaltending. So I'm not sure how you take that team and you go in the playoffs and you just hand the ball to one guy every night. Like, that doesn't make much sense to me, right? You probably should, this, what do they say, dance with a girl that brung you. I would be, you know, I think Mike Smith starts the first game, maybe he gets the second, but I'll bet you Mikko Koskinen plays in the first round.
Here's the tale of the tape. Mike Smith, by the way, 38 years old. He had 37 starts this year. Yeah. Well, he probably liked it. You just took 4 years off him. Mike Smith, 38 years old, 37 starts, and Koskinen, 34 starts, and they both had pretty darn good numbers. Koskinen had the better save percentage and the better goals against, but, you know, a negligible difference. And maybe, as you said, the puck handling, you know, Brian Burke's alluded to this all year long. When you have Mike Smith in net, you essentially have a third defenseman because he can handle the puck so well. So it's going to be really interesting. Honestly, we do look forward to a resumption. We don't have much time left with Mark Spector. Probably time for just a couple more. Go real quick, JB. What do you got?
I was just going to ask about the Blackhawks themselves, and I know there is pressure, well, a little bit of pressure on Edmonton to get by them. Is there any additional concern that it is Taves and Kane? Do those names themselves make them a bigger scare for the Oilers, or is it still like 12th-seeded team doesn't matter?
Well, that's the biggest, you know, the biggest thing. Like, here's the recipe for Chicago, you guys. Anytime you got Taves and Kane, of course you're worried about them. They're great players. Chicago gives up the most chances in a league. Right, they give up. They look at all the different categories, and they're in the top three. And chances allowed, goals allowed, this allowed, that allowed. So you're going to get your chances against Chicago. That's what it boils down to. If Chicago can hang around, right? They've got Corey Crawford, who's obviously going to be healthy, and he's very experienced, and he's won some cups, and he's really carried them this season. They wouldn't even be 12th without him. If they can hang around till late in the game, now you look down your bench and you got Patrick Kane, who's one of the great gamers of his generation, right? he's one of the guys that, of all the guys in this generation of players, you need a goal with 2 minutes left. You got a late power play. You're in overtime. Patrick Kane is money. So, you know, that's how I see this series going. If Edmonton can kind of flex its offensive muscles here and get to four, you know, by the second period, I don't like Chicago's chances. If it's a 3-2 game in the third, now's when all that veteran experience and Johnny Toews winning a key draw and Patrick Kane scoring a key goal, that's where they get you. They know how to play in tough, crucial, pressure-filled games. Edmonton hadn't had many of those, gentlemen. So that would be where Chicago holds certainly the advantage of experience.
With Mark Spector, last word to you, Stewie.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot again here. So we're talking hypotheticals now. So say, for whatever reason, Edmonton does end up with the first overall pick, and that's not my personal opinion. I personally have them winning the Stanley Cup. Do you see them taking Lafreniere with the number one pick, or do you see them trading down? Hypothetically.
Geez, that's a good question. Whenever I think of Edmonton getting the number one pick, all I think is the apoplectic hockey world burning down the house. I haven't thought of what they'd actually do with it. I don't see how anyone could look at I don't know if he's a generational player, but far and away the best player in the draft, who you'd obviously have under entry-level numbers for the first 3 years. How do you not take him? I think you take him, and if 3 years from now, guys, you go, oh, man, he's so good, we can't afford him, well, then you trade him, and you get everything you were going to get today but more. So if I'm a general manager, I take that player all day long. I put him on my roster through his entry-level contract, and then I do the math after that and figure things out.
Amen to that. Hopefully that doesn't befall the Edmonton Oilers, because that would mean they're eliminated in the first round, and they'd love to win a playoff series for the first time in many, many years. Mark Spector, thanks so much for your time here, and enjoy. It looks like you'll be a busy, busy man, certainly with the resumption of Phase 3 and then hopefully the resumption of play around August 1st. Thanks so much, Mark.
All right, looking forward to it. Boys, talk again.
There is Mark Spector, senior columnist for Sportsnet.ca, based in Edmonton, one of the two presumed to be hub cities. Nothing's official till it's official, but it's looking like that will be official, Edmonton and Toronto as the two hub cities. Up next, we're back with Stewie and Justin for a little Take Your Pick Summer Edition. Lots of good topics to dig into. The debate roars on. Keep it locked here, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Back, Hockey Central. Great to have you along on this beautiful Friday. Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, David Amber. Time now for Take Your Pick. You guys ready?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. 10 days from now, teams are expected to start Phase 3 formal training camp. Which player is most likely to be the most out of shape?
Okay, I'm still laughing. I'm going to go with one of the teams that's probably the furthest away, so they have the least amount of chance of hearing this. I'm going to go with Tampa Bay. We're going to go down south to Tampa Bay, and I'm going to say Pat Maroon, just because he's known for being a big guy. I may have a little bit of an inside scoop on him. So a lot of golf, a lot of jet skiing, a lot of good restaurants down there. So Pat Maroon.
What? This is the worst question you've ever asked.
If I get in trouble, if I get in trouble, like, David, we're going to have words.
I'm pretty confident, like, there's a guy in Arizona playing golf who's not listening right now. I guess Kessel. Can I pick Kessel?
I assumed he might be a pick. He's a freak of nature, though. He doesn't need to hit the gym. But
who are you going with, David?
I'll stick with Cass. I'd like to see what the pandemic has done to his body. It was already doughy, so now it's probably extra.
Cowardly. Listen. Pick someone to call fat on the air, David. Do it.
No. Delete this, please. Listen. Phil Kessel is one of the strongest guys. You talk to other players, and he's one of the best athletes in the league, which is just, you know, a surprise. The guy's won 2 Stanley Cups. He's, you know, a possible Hall of Famer. I'm a radio guy. I have nothing to, leave me out of this. All right. Which Leaf benefited most which Leaf benefited most from the time off? Take your pick.
I'm going to go with John Tavares, just because he was catching probably a little bit of heat from the media because he was getting outshone by Austin Matthews and maybe a little bit of Mitch Marner. So I think now with the reset, he's a veteran guy, knows how to take care of his body. I think he's going to come back and have a great playoff series. John Tavares.
How about our man Soupy? How about Ilya Mikheyev, who literally needed his body? Yeah, I know. He's a guy. He's on the team. He's a guy who needed his wrist to sort of, you know, make like Wolverine and re-heal. This guy's going to be back in the top six. He's going to be ready to roll. Look out for that guy, man. He's a player.
Yeah. I was thinking even Morgan Riley, right? Because Morgan Riley was coming back from an injury as well. There's a few guys. And maybe Freddie Anderson, right? Like, he's got that rest. We were so concerned. We were counting every one of his starts. Oh, he needs to be between 55 and 60. And we're getting concerned. And now it's like he's nothing if not rested. So a lot of good choices there. Which coach is most desperately needing to win at least one playoff round? Jeremy Colladin, John Cooper, Todd Reirden. Take your pick.
I'll just go with John Cooper, just based on him. I know he did recently get extended. I think it was last year he got extended, but expectations are high in Tampa Bay, and when you're expected to win the Stanley Cup last season and you get swept in the first round, I don't care what you say, you're on the hot seat, and you've seen now coach is getting fired for a lot less, so I'm not saying he's going to get fired if they don't win, but I think this playoff series is going to depend a lot on the future of John Cooper.
Yeah, I think that's the right pick. You know, Jeremy Colladin's got the Blackhawks in about 12th place, but there's some encouraging signs there, but the pressure's not on them to win. Tampa Bay got, you know, they won the President's Trophy, then got swept in the first round last year, and this whole season came down to, but what do you do when it matters? And yes, it's a weird year, but I think the pressure is on them to perform in the early going, so I'll say John Cooper too.
Interesting. Todd Reirden, to me, would be an interesting pick as well. Remember, they imploded against Carolina last year and lost in seven games. And the Caps, again, one of those great teams who gets a bye, essentially, in the first round. So we will see. There's definitely some pressure on some of these coaches. How about a little over-under? I'll put the number at 20. Over-under, how many players are going to opt out of returning to play?
I'm going to go with under, just based on the fact there's a lot of dollars and cents that are at stake here. And I know a lot of guys have families and they're going to be worried about being away and catching COVID and things like that. But I think for the long-term stability of the game, I think cooler heads are going to prevail. And you're seeing right now, it looks like there's going to be some labor peace for the next couple of years as well. So I think the players collectively are going to agree. But obviously, just like anything, there's going to be a couple guys that opt out. I would say I personally would have set the line at 8.5. So I'm going under 8.5. So we'll check in on that down the line.
What was your line? What was the number at, David?
20.
Remember, 20. There's 24 teams. That's less than one. That's fewer than one guy per team. I thought that was a pretty reasonable line. I think it'll be close to 20, if not 20. But that's me. What do you think, Justin?
Wow. I mean, if it was that, I'll definitely take under, David. I think that's a big number. I mean, you're looking at a real huge percentage of a 16th of the guys essentially that wouldn't be coming back then. So I guess that's bad math. Ignore me. But I think it's probably going to be around four or five guys. You know, maybe a guy has a pregnant wife or whatever. Berkey made a good point on the show yesterday saying that as much as these guys will have the option to not go back, you know, it's a different hockey world, a different hockey climate. If hockey doesn't make an effort to return, when you come back in a year from now, if this doesn't happen, it's different. So there is some obligation for players who are torn to make this effort, to keep everyone's, you know, pockets fat, to keep the game moving forward. And I think there's going to be a little bit of pressure in these guys to go. So I think in the end, you're looking at about four or five guys.
And to add to that, David, you need to understand there's probably only three guys per team that would even have the clout to say, hey, you know what, I'm not coming back. Because anyone else, yeah. If I said I'm not coming back, they'd be like, hey, Stewie, yeah, we'll catch you on the 35th of February. Don't let the door hit you on your way out, buddy.
Now, that's a good point, but listen, there are some medical guys. Listen, Max Domi has diabetes. Luke Cunningham has diabetes. Anton Strowman has a respiratory issue. I mean, there are a handful of guys who have legitimate concerns, and I'd be dumbfounded if people are going to be like, well, who cares if you have a medical condition? I'd like to think that guys feel comfortable enough to put themselves first and not be frightened by some sort of fall, you know, guys calling them out or whatever. But who knows? We'll wait and see. Which team would you guys like most like to win the draft lottery and win the first overall pick?
Berkey, I hope you're listening here, and he rose to me last time. I'm going with Pittsburgh Penguins because I like to see teams that have been rewarded over the years for drafting and developing guys and turning guys not just into stars, but quality NHL players. And say what you want. A lot of their top guys were hurt this year, but they've had guys that they've developed, you know, throughout the system come up from Wilkes-Barre and perform and turn into regular NHL players as opposed to other teams that are hoping they're going to draft a stud. So I want to see those teams that get rewarded with this first overall pick. For me, I'm going Pittsburgh Penguins.
To Stewie's point about Pittsburgh playing well with random guys, one of my favorite tweets is it's something to the effect of Pittsburgh always has two guys named like Mark Flibbit and Buzz Donk, and then you look and they have 60 points each. It's like, where did these guys come from? So that's a good pick. But the easy one is the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, this was their year to have their draft. This is a French-speaking player. This is a team that probably shouldn't even be involved in this play-in. It's all shaping up oh so beautiful for Les Habitants to get a superstar and to go up against Austin Matthews for years to come.
David, who's your pick?
Remember the draft was supposed to take place in Montreal, so that would be a nice bookend for the Habs to grab that first pick. We're on a Toronto radio station. I grew up in Toronto. I'm going to say the Toronto Maple Leafs. If they're somehow not going to get past Columbus, if they don't get past Columbus, imagine how nice this would be to have this guy locked in at $950,000.
Yeah.
I think that would be very cool. But there's a number of teams where you go, oh my God, how cool would it be if that guy jumped in right there, right away? So looking ahead to the draft, next question. Second overall, would you take Byfield or Stützle? Hopefully I said it right.
I'm going with Byfield, and again, we had Sam Constantino on the other day, and he was saying it's a toss-up, but for me, you know, everyone was looking for a 6'4", 200-something-pound centerman to be, you know, parading through the West, and now that it's arrived, well, you know, Germany's got good development systems. Say what you want about Leon Draisaitl. He played a lot of his junior hockey in Canada, and I don't think the German hockey is there yet. I don't think it's up there to par with the Canadian hockey system. In my opinion, Quinton Byfield is a star, and whether he goes second or fourth, where I've seen some people even have him down as low as fifth, you're going to look back at this draft in a couple of years and say, you know what, he should have been pushing for first overall.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is everyone is like, yeah, the league is getting small and fast, and then every single person who comes on our show goes, God, would I love to have Tom Wilson on my team. Could you imagine if you had a guy who could score, who was big and physical? Like, to a man, everyone talks about Tom Wilson. It's insane. So, yeah, I got Byfield, too. He's the big dude down the middle that can get it done, and, you know, I think when it all shakes out, that'll end up being the 1-2 that they kind of projected before the season started.
And worth noting, he's 10 months younger than Lafreniere, and that's not nothing.
He may be 6'6", this kid.
He's not. Yeah, he's 17 till August, so he's still, you know, and I had a chance to interview him, and he said, I hope teams factor that in. That's a lot of development. That's a whole season, essentially, Stewie. You deal with 2006.
Yeah, but I just don't like the fact that people are, you know, they're, you know, I compared him to Eric Staal, a little bit of Eric Staal, but, you know, people are making the comparisons almost like Eric Daze, which I'm really, really offended by that. But I'm like, you know, a year ago, this guy, you know, everyone was singing his praises. Now we're getting a little bit closer. It's like, oh, well, you know, his shot and his compete level, he didn't do well at the World Juniors. Do you know how hard it is as an underage player at the World Juniors? We had Sidney Crosby. The first year, I think he was like 15th on the team in scoring his first year as an underager. So it's really, really tough, and I don't think the comparisons is fair for him just based on one tournament. In my opinion, he's going to be a star in the National Hockey League for years to come.
But what has Crosby done, really?
Okay, next question.
So take your pick here. Drafting a player, if you know 100%, they would become one of these, either a franchise center, a franchise defenseman, or a franchise goalie. What do you take? Take your pick.
I love the studio.
Justin, go. You go first. I got to think about this one here.
Here's the thing. If you could guarantee it was a thing, I feel like you got to say goaltender, because if you can give me 10 years of like 920, which, by the way, Henrik Lundqvist gave the New York Rangers 7 straight years of 920 and still didn't get it done. So it doesn't guarantee anything. But if you can guarantee me that, I think I got to take that. Like, I understand the whole Crosby, you know, the powerhouse center as a franchise driver. But man, goaltending is tough to come by.
Yeah, I concur. Sorry, David.
Oh, yeah. What do you say?
Just ruins the game when we agree.
All right, we'll stick on the goalie theme. We heard Mark Spector talk about Koskinen or Mike Smith, and he said Mike Smith. There's a few teams that have some decisions to make. Let's start with the Hurricanes. Who starts game one, Reimer or Mrazek? Take your pick.
I'm going with Mrazek, and I could be completely wrong, but I believe his numbers were better throughout the season. I know he had the injury. I'm going with Mrazek, just based on what he did last year.
Yeah, I feel like Mrazek was kind of waiting for the right situation to be the goaltender he could be, and I think he's got a pretty good spot there in Carolina. It feels like it's his crease. I'll concur with Stewie there. Mrazek's the guy for now.
I'm going with David Ayers, but that's just me. Okay, so...
that's why you picked this question, I know it.
The Rangers. Lundqvist, Georgiev, or Shesterkin. I'm probably not saying that one right either, but which one is your game one starter? Take your pick, Stewie.
I'm going with Shesterkin, and again, I'm going to be careful with my words, because last time I talked about the New York Rangers, I ended up roasted on Twitter for about 2 weeks here, and you know, I love the King. Is he a Hall of Famer? That's another debate for another show and another time, but I think he's going to end up in the press box, you know, for this first round here. He may get down mid-series, but I think he starts, the King starts in the press box the first start of this series.
Ah, the King. Put Hank in net. Henrik is the guy who should get the crease. Yes, here's why. Because the organization needs that number one overall pick anyway. So worst case scenario is they get in the mix. No, but it's not even a slight. I don't even mean to this as a slight. So worst case scenario is that you lose and you get yourself in the mix for that pick. But I think he's proven himself over the years enough to deserve one more kick at this playoff shot. He's been their guy for years and years. He's an older guy who's coming off a lot of rest. I think this sort of experience for him, it gives him a chance to end things on the Rangers on a positive note. I just like all the potential outcomes if you start Lundqvist.
You're afraid of Rangers Twitter. Just admit it.
No.
Oh, I loathe Rangers honestly, Twitter. All of you. Every one of you listening. Boo.
I'm with Justin here. Listen, if Lundqvist's contract was up at the end of this year, I think it'd be much easier to go with one of the other guys. The fact that he still has another year at $8.5 million, you've got to deal with that whole massaging that situation. I think Lundqvist is going to start game one, but I guess we will see what David Ooh. Quinn has up his sleeve. A couple more take your picks. This is a good one. What's going to be the most common injury that players are going to suffer upon return to play? Take your points.
It's going to be torn motivator cuff, and that's going to be disguised as, hey, I'm out of shape. So there's going to be, I think, two or three guys that just have no juice. They're too out of shape. They can't go. So they're going to be day-to-day with the torn motivator cuff. So I'm going with that.
Yeah, this is going to be the era of creatively listed injuries. Just like, all of body injury, brain injury. No, this, I really think it'll end up being like groin, you know, that sort of thing where you haven't had to go that full burst and full out and push those sort of ligaments. So I think I'll take groin, even though motivator cuff's a good pick.
All right, yeah, there's definitely going to be some wonky kind of preseason type injuries, even though it'll be playoff hockey. Okay, this is what I'm most excited about, guys. There's reseeding. Finally, it's not these, you know, set playoff matchups. There's reseeding. Pretty much, you know, any matchup could take place if the right things fall into line. What is the number one matchup you would love to see somehow happen during this Stanley Cup playoff? Take your pick.
I'm going to go Toronto-Boston. And Toronto's going to go right in.
That's the worst answer I've ever heard. Come
on. They're going to come in. They're going to do a number on Columbus. And then they're going to slay the beast of the Bruins. And then now we can stop talking about it like we have for the last, whatever it is, 8 years about Toronto being haunted by the ghost of Boston's past.
Yeah. No, didn't we get it in Nashville, Arizona? Isn't that the one that everyone has been clamoring for all this time? No. I'll take a good battle in New York, a battle of Alberta, you know, Islanders, Rangers, Flames, Oilers. You know, we've seen lots of good Washington, Pittsburgh, which I enjoy, and maybe a good Toronto, Montreal would help too. So any of the rivalries that have we were hoping would happen with the current bracket format that haven't happened, I would love to see one of those really play out.
I'll tell you right now, we would get New York, New York, but it would take absolute chaos because you're talking about the 7th seed in New York versus the 11th seed in the Rangers. Getting Toronto, Montreal would be almost impossible. You couldn't get it in the qualifying round, obviously, and you couldn't get it in the first round. You would need some craziness to take place for Toronto and Montreal to meet. I think that would actually have to be in the conference final. The Toronto-Boston that Stewie's salivating for.
Second round, baby.
That could be essentially in the round of 16, the opening round, I guess they're going to call it, which would mean that you'd have to have chalk in the first round, where you'd have to have the 9, 10, 11, and 12 seeds all get eliminated, and Toronto, as the 8th seed, would go up against the number 1 seed in Boston, if that holds true.
You know what's going to happen.
A lot of crazy.
You know what's going to happen.
Well, it very well could. Let's do one more, and this one, you know, I think I know Stewie's answer. Who right now is the favorite to win the Stanley Cup?
Well, that's two different questions. Who's the favorite or who do I think? Which is, in turn, is the same thing. But for me, I'm going with the Edmonton Oilers. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl are going to put the team on their back. Like I said, producing primary and secondary scoring, and the other guys that they stepped that they got for at the deadline are going to step up, provide that tertiary scoring. There's that reference. Edmonton Oilers are your 2020 NHL Stanley Cup champions.
I'll take the two Atlantic Division teams that aren't the Leafs, that being Boston and Tampa. I think Boston's core is older with Chara and Bergeron and Marchand. I feel like those guys coming into this rested, they're already the best team in the league. I think Boston still got to be the favorite coming out of it. I also like Colorado coming out of the West, so a couple of good potential matchups.
David, who do you got here? Tiebreaker to you.
No one's talking about Vegas. Remember, they went and got Robin Lehner.
Right.
Vegas would scare me. They are going to be a tough out. Their blue line, there's some question marks there, but Vegas is going to be a tough out. And if I'm going to pick a real dark horse, a real wild card, you guys can laugh me out of here, but I'll say Vancouver. I'll say Vancouver has... I love their mix of youth and experience. The Toffoli addition was fantastic.
Just terrible.
Markstrom's healthy. Listen, watch them. They'll get swept in the first round. But if they don't, honestly, something about the makeup of that team. I've been hot for them all year, and I say, why not? That would be the real flyer here, the Vancouver Canucks. But again, I'm very dumb, so don't listen.
Hey, if you can get stops and you can score, you can win. They can do both of those things, so fair pick.
Agreed. That's what makes this great theater. We don't know how this is going to play out. We got to quickly take a break. Thanks, guys, for indulging me with a little Take Your Pick. We're going to wrap things up on Hockey Central. Coming up, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back. We're wrapping things up here on Hockey Central as we work our way towards the weekend with Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart. Gentlemen, what's on tap for this beautiful summer weekend?
Well, I just got back from vacation, so I'm going to take a nap because I was jumping in the water with the kids, throwing them over the top rope. So I'm going to take some time to myself and relax over the weekend.
I have invested big dollars, $39.99 at Costco for a kiddie pool that is on our little rooftop patio, and I intend to spend the weekend soaking my ankles in there while the kid bounces around.
I forgot to mention, David, next time someone goes to Costco, please grab me a bag of those chocolate almonds. I'm running low.
Thank you.
Please and thank you, management.
I will have those for you next time I see you. Guys, have a great weekend. Awesome time as always on Hockey Central. Stay safe, everyone. Have fun. We'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the weekend.